This is Whiskey and Risk, a J. Crew podcast where we talk about all things risky while drinking a little bit of whiskey. I'm Max.
And I'm Jackson. Let's get into it. Cheers.
Let's make it feel short. I mean, it's the same height for me, too.
I know.
But we happen to be the same height.
Can you put your chair down?
Yes.
I'm kidding. Leave it. All right.
Welcome back to another episode of Whiskey and Risk.
Welcome back.
A J. Krug podcast here. I am Jackson Doyle.
And I'm Max Katzbeck.
We got a lot to unpack today, but first, let's talk a little bit about what we're drinking here.
Today, Ricky, our fearless podcast leader over here, was gracious enough to bring a very fancy bourbon from across the ocean. I don't even know if it's bourbon. I think it's technically just whiskey.
Yeah.
Because it was from Japan. It's called Hibiki by Suntory Whiskey. And let me tell you, I've had a couple sips already. It's real smooth. I really like it. Usually used to the American bourbon. So it's a nice little switch up. And I pulled up online a little bit about the whiskey. So straight from the website, it says Kansan or Complete Hibiki Whiskey is a harmonious blend of innumerous malt and grain whiskeys, which are meticulously blended to create a full orchestra. Of flavors and aromas. Seductive, blossoming, and enigmatic. Hibiki Whiskey celebrates an unrivaled art of blending, fine craftsmanship, and a sense of luxury from the house of Suntory. Hibiki was launched in 1989 to commemorate Suntory's 90th anniversary and has ever since been embraced as the paragon of the art of Japanese whiskey, the very product of Japanese nature and her people. Hibiki Whiskey is not only Japan's most highly awarded blended whiskey, but among the most prestigious and honored whiskeys in the world. And let me tell you, I can attest to that. What do you think about this one, Jackson?
Well, I just took my first sip while you were talking right there, and I actually like it. So I lean more towards the whiskeys, kind of like Maker's. Maker's my favorite. I like the little sweeter taste, but this is good. There's another sip right there live for everybody, but yeah, I mean, I like it. I'll probably pour a little bit more in here. I only took a little taste, but...
I mean, I can taste the seductivity in this, that's for sure. Well,
okay, I mean, it is Friday.
It is Friday.
But yeah, no, just how have the weeks been going? I know, you know, we took about a week and a half off of here. Things have just been crazy, a lot of movement in and out of the office, so... How have things been going on your end?
Well, I think since the last time we recorded, we had Memorial Day weekend in between, so we had a short week. Last week, I was out of the office most of the week, meeting with clients, different events that I was attending, took a couple clients to the Cubs game last Friday, which was fantastic, you know?
Yeah.
My middle name's Wrigley, so I was kind of born into being a Cubs fan. Thankfully, I turned out that way, and it's always great to go on a Friday afternoon at Wrigley Field, and it was a beautiful day, you know, catching up with some clients, just developing those relationships. So that was great. Other than that, just been working on some upcoming renewals and just trying to wrap a couple group health deals up, actually, for 7-1. But, you know, last week I was out for most of the week, so not too much from a new business point of view, just developing relationships and maintaining those relationships I currently have. Jackson, how about you? You've been kind of going around, hitting the phones, hitting the pavement, meeting with new prospective clients. So what have you been seeing?
I mean, just steady grind. Things have just remained consistent.
On that grizzy.
Yep. Like you said, things have picked up on the phones. Our last podcast, we kind of dove in that things were crazy. Had multiple proposals in that week. And as things kind of level out back to square one in terms of filling the pipeline, getting things in. But the week before last, you and I actually went to an event together, that golf outing.
Oh, yeah, we did.
And that was awesome. You brought me there as a guest, and that was super cool.
Yeah.
I was able to meet all those people.
Yeah. Really just trying to dive in there, grow my network, meet some more people, get in front of people. And that was a beautiful day, too. So, I mean,
that was great.
Any day on the course. And I love my job, but it beats sitting in the office. Yeah. So I think you can agree with that. You know, going back to what you kind of said, last time we talked, we had a lot of stuff that we were working on, hot prospects, trying to get deals across the door. And, you know, things have kind of leveled out, just working more on renewals and more office work. And I think you'll find out, you know, obviously you've been in the business for a year. I've been in it for about 7 years. The longer you're in it, the more clients you have. So you're servicing more of those clients. It's really up and downs in this industry. So those lulls are kind of evened out by the service work on providing different services to your current client base. But I remember when I was in your position too, you know, you get really hot, you have all these deals that you're working, and then you got to fill up the pipeline. So it's, you know, after that high, it kind of levels out and you're just trying to find more clients to get in front of and grow that initial book of business. And I think you're doing a great job of that. And like I said, it's really just learning to deal with those ups and downs in the industry. I'm sure many industries are like that, but definitely see that. And on the sales side, on the producing side for commercial insurance, yeah. Which I think you've been handling really well, Jackson.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that. Yeah, I mean, things kind of come in waves. It seems like, you know, there's some definite hot renewal times that I'm in effective dates of when people have coverages in the fall and the spring, and then, of course, at the end of the year.
Yep.
So there are definitely times of the year that there's more going on. There's more businesses that renew at the same time, especially I feel like on your end with not only the commercial, but with group health. I'm finding when you're talking to business owners about their group health insurance and different things, there's a lot here in the summer and then mainly at the end of the year or the beginning of the next year.
Yeah, absolutely. So the group health, companies put different plans in place throughout the year. You know, a company might start up in July, so they get their coverages in July. But a lot of the time, what we find at our agency is our book on the group health side is very heavy. And I think this is industry-wide. January 1st, there seem to be a lot of group health renewals on January 1st. I think it's just easier for employers and employees to keep track of their year and their deductible levels and kind of know where they're at when it's on that January 1st date. So a lot of companies kind of go that way and prefer to do that. What that means for us and our team and Ricky over here, he's the podcast expert in running all the behind the scenes and making us sound really good. But when he's not doing this, he's working on the employee benefits side and servicing accounts. And I think he can agree that there might be a little bit of a lull in the summer. You know, you have some renewals, but that fourth quarter comes around and probably I would say close to at least half of our group health business might not be that big. I'm just kind of throwing a number out there, but it's definitely a considerable amount of renewals are January 1st. Yeah. So our employee benefits team is working those extra hours, making sure all those renewals are out. I'm negotiating with the carriers to get the best rates possible for our clients. And it's a really, really busy time for them. But I mean, it's just kind of like I said, in general, though, on the sales side, you got to get used to those ups and downs in the business. And I think that's probably any sales job, but in particular what we do, that's just kind of what I've found too. So
yeah, I get that. And like I said, I've seen it. So there's just times that there's a lot going on. And then there's times that you're more prepping. You're getting out in front of things, being a little bit more proactive, which isn't a bad thing by any means. But before we dive into more coverage talk and different things around insurance, do you hear that? It is time for an employee spotlight. Oh, no. I think it's a new segment here.
Oh, I think that just happened.
And Risk. And I don't know if anybody was ready for that, especially who's being shouted out. And that is our director of the commercial lines, Mr. Jeff Schultz.
Jeffrey.
Yep. We wanted to give a shout out to Jeff. He's put a lot of work in to get this podcast up and moving on a motivational side, but then also supporting us, giving us ideas, talking things through on a day-to-day basis. He pretty much runs the commercial team on a day-to-day basis, but Max has been around him about going on 7 years now. What do you got to say about our employee spotlight?
Jeffrey, our fearless leader. Got to say, Jeff's a great boss. He is definitely the motivation for us in the office, helps us with our new business cases. He's kind of that expert that we rely on that's, you know, had the experience in the industry. He services our larger clients at the agency, helps us as younger producers with our new business opportunities, manages the relationships with carriers, with underwriters. I mean, Jeff, what doesn't he do? And yeah, I mean, he was really kind of the force behind the podcast. Obviously, myself, Jackson, are, you know, the host of the podcast, but Jeff really came up to us and brought the idea to us at the beginning of the year saying, hey, we thought this might be a good opportunity for you guys. We want to get something going, something a little bit different. Kind of motivated us to get everything going. Then obviously Ricky joined on board, and lo and behold, Ricky is a podcast guru. So kind of the stars aligned on this one, but no, Jeff definitely deserves a shout out and great boss. Love working with him. Yeah. And pew, 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 pew. I like that. I like that.
Yeah, just had to throw it in there really quick. Slight plug in terms of Jeff. You know, any business owners or anybody out there in terms of coverage working in the alarm, security, fire suppression space, that is his main niche. He knows the ins and outs of the entire industry.
Subject matter expert.
That's right. And not to say he can't fill any role in the commercial line space, but that's his bread and butter and what he specializes here. But we're going to fade out of that segment. Again, one more shout out for Jeff Schultz, the director of our commercial lines and our humble leader.
Cheers, Jeff.
Cheers, Jeff. But yeah, our last podcast, we kind of talked about different things that we were seeing on coverage review and things going on. Have there been any other things or items that you've been seeing popping up with your clients?
Yeah, you know what? This is not super new. This has been kind of over the past couple years, and especially the past 1-2 years, I think it's become even more important. Employment practices liability. We see a lot of clients or new prospective clients when reviewing their insurance policies that might not have employment practices liability in place. And that's something me personally as a insurance advisor, I'm always recommending. Even if you have only a couple of employees and, you know, they've been your employees for a number of years, you might say, hey, I don't need employment practices liability. I trust my guys, which is great. You know, obviously in a perfect world, no one has a claim. Nothing bad ever happens. That's what you want. But we've definitely seen an uptick in employment practices liability related claims. And that's just the way that the world's going. I don't see that going down anytime soon. So when I'm talking to, you know, some of my clients, a lot of people will say, hey, Max, what is employment practices liability? Why do I need this? I already have all these other coverages. I already insure my building. I have workers' compensation. Doesn't that cover my employees? I've got general liability if I get sued. Why do I need employment practices liability coverage? What employment practices liability coverage is, essentially, is it protects you from any lawsuits from your employees related to hiring, firing, wrongful termination, sexual harassment, discrimination, anything in that arena. And whether or not you are indeed faulty of having a claim or going through something that merits a claim, a lot of times those claims are frivolous. Maybe it's an angry employee that was terminated and now is alleging something that didn't happen or is kind of a stretch, but they're still going to sue you. And none of your other policies are going to provide you any of those defense costs associated to defending yourself. With that being said, there are definitely times that employees do have legitimate claims for employment practices, for discrimination. And that might not, you know, as a business owner, be you directly. It might be one of your managers or another one of your employees harassing another employee. Yeah. So you never really know what can happen, but what essentially this policy will do is provide you with the defense costs to defend your company and you from being sued from an employment practices liability claim. And it'll also pay out in a judgment. A lot of these policies too come with resources, whether that be an attorney, a human resources connection or firm that you can call if you say, hey, I want to fire this person. I have grounds to do so, but I think there might be some backlash. What's the proper way for me to go about doing that?
I think that's the way that you should approach it. And I think that's when it becomes a conversation piece with business owners, is specifically those that don't have that department.
Right.
They don't have an HR person. They don't have somebody that handles that all the time. And you have a business owner that's like, okay, I'm going to fire this person. But they've never had training in that. They don't know how to go about that. And that is a way that they can have those questions answered and then avoid that.
Absolutely.
Completely. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I really do think if you have any employees, you should really consider having the employment practices liability coverage included. Like I said, we've seen a big uptick in these claims. And a lot of times you can add a sublimit onto your general liability or business owner's policy that includes some employment practices liability coverage. Typically, it's minimal. It might be $50,000, $100,000, $250,000. Limit. But when you do that, sometimes the coverages aren't as broad as they would be if you went with option B, which is buying a standalone employment practices liability policy. Typically, we sell policies on the employment practices side with limits starting at $1 million. A lot of things go into the factors of coming up with that premium. Your past claims history, how does your employee handbook look? How does it read? What kind of steps do you have in place to minimize your exposure to employment practices, liability claim, and your deductible limits? But typically we start off with $1 million limit and you can expect a premium. I'm just going to throw out $1,000 to $1,500 annually.
That's about right.
Yeah, for $1 million limit. Now, again, that depends on the number of employees that you have, your past experience, the risk management procedures that you have in place. Let's say you don't have an employee handbook at all and you're hiring 20 new employees a week, your premiums are definitely going to be higher than I just shared because you have more of an exposure. But that's kind of a good ballpark thing to look at. And when you buy on a standalone basis, there's some additional broader coverage that you can purchase in addition to it. So one of the things that I always like to bring up is third-party employment liability coverage. So essentially what the third party is going to do is the first party is going to be your employees. So if your employees sued you for alleging any of those acts that I said earlier, third party to be if you have employees that are going to a job site or working with customers and that customer alleges that your employee harassed them or did any of those things that I shared earlier to them and sues your company for that, that's a third party. So when you're looking at the employment practices liability policies, make sure that you know, hey, is this just first party or is this first and third? Do I have that third party exposure? That's definitely something that you want to look at. Anything that you see with your clients on the employment practices side, Jackson?
I mean, it comes up in terms of proposal, like minor limits, like you say, that can just be included. And then there are suggestions that come into play, especially with majority of my clients are on the manufacturing side, not having an HR department or somebody that's trained for those situations.
Right.
And so mainly it's just a set of owners or it's a president of a company that's doing the hiring and firing and they've
wearing all
trained.
The hats.
Yeah. And they don't know how to go about it. And then it's all the what if. So it's definitely come up. But when it came up in a situation that I thought was interesting was Jeff and I actually went to a proposal that I had about 3 weeks ago. And it was a union contractor. And so all of his employees are union. So in terms of hiring and firing, that's through the union. That's pretty much handled and cycled through that union.
Right.
And he was like, this isn't coverage that we've ever looked into. But then when you start diving into that, it's not just hiring and firing. It's discrimination and it's sexual harassment and different things. It kind of caught his attention. And he was like, well, I actually had to let a guy go, you know, let the union know. And he's not on my crew anymore because he was doing a roof over at a college. And one of his guys out there hit a little whistle at a student walking by.
Yeah.
And staff member at the building, they had some concerns about that. And a couple strongly worded concerns at that.
Yeah.
And, you know, it didn't turn into anything, but he was like, well, I did run into that situation. And if it was, you know, so-and-so that's high up and it was a situation and it escalated, then it might
turn into a lawsuit
that could be had. And
yeah.
So we ended up implementing that coverage because if it comes into a situation of the what if, and then the what if happens to be when you don't have the coverage, that's going to be a bad conversation between us of, hey, we brought it up. You didn't think it would be a situation and then it happened to be and now we're in some trouble.
Yeah. And that example specifically, so that would be more of a third party example where that student is not an employee of the company, but alleges that sexual harassment of your employee and ends up suing you for that. That's a third party. So not all employment practices liability policies include that third party. So that's something that you should look through your policies or talk to your broker about and make sure that you have that coverage if you have that exposure.
Right.
Another thing to look at that I want to quickly mention is defense costs inside versus outside the limit. There's two ways that carriers will do this. If your defense costs are inside the limit, that's actually a lesser coverage than if they're outside the limit. Inside the limit means your defense costs, your court costs in defending yourself are going to decrease or erode your overall limit. So if it's $1 million and you have $500,000 in defense costs alone, and let's say a $700,000 judgment against you, you're going to be on the hook for that $200 because that defense cost ate half your limit. Defense costs outside the limit, much better because it's, you know, the carrier's going to pay whatever it is
right.
to defend you. And that $1 million is just going to go to that settlement. So that's just another thing that I wanted to
that's a good point.
Share. But without getting too far into the weeds, just wanted to bring up that because it's been something that we've been talking about a lot. But moving on to wrap this up, we did see something that was a little interesting
let's go into the news.
I'll let Jackson share. He printed out the article and before he even brought it up to me today, I saw this on my phone last night and read the article, so kind of ironic. But
well, it's nice that we're podcasting today because it came out this week, actually, I think yesterday, but it's not even just insurance news. It's surrounded about insurance, but when I saw it, it was just on Twitter. It was just news that I think people would be interested in seeing.
It's very infrequent that insurance news gets on platforms that people actually care about. So.
So the headline of the article just reads that a Missouri woman was awarded $5.2 million in settlement from the insurance company Geico after contracting an STD from her partner in his vehicle, to which was insured by Geico.
Yeah.
So you see that and you're like, what? That was, you know, us working in insurance. I saw it on Twitter and immediately I click on it because, one, I'm seeing $5.2 million. I'm seeing what everybody sees, which is STD contracted in car. And then I'm seeing
Geico. Yeah. So I need to connect the dots. And I mean, we both read the article.
And do some business research on this one.
That's right. I had to do some fact checking to know what really was going on. But yeah, after I kind of looked into it, it said that the woman actually submitted a petition to Geico directly. She put it all in directly. She was going after Geico, not the guy individually from the start. She wanted to find the loophole of it being done in a car and having the actions and activities or whatever in the car being circled back to the insurer of the car insurance, which I think is a way out there frame of thinking that ultimately awarded her $5.2 million.
Yeah. I think most people would think this is, you know, outrageous or, you know, obviously shout out to this woman. She's got to deal with this, but to file an auto claim against Geico, it kind of goes back to the policy language. It is interesting the more that you dive into this, because the way that the policy language reads is that when your vehicle is in use, we're providing coverage. Right. Well, she's alleging that that vehicle was in use.
Right.
She was inside that vehicle.
She was in the vehicle. Right.
And she contracted this STD. So, you know, obviously, I don't think Geico, even them, took this seriously at first, because it sounds like she reached out to them. They declined it.
That's right.
Denied it and went through another judicial system. And an arbitrator eventually awarded her $5.2 million for this and said Geico has to pay. So an interesting thing that I was talking to Jackson about when we were preparing for this podcast is things like this, these kind of claims or situations that people don't really think about. If you hire an attorney that can read through the policy language and say, hey, I think that your policy should cover this, even though you've never thought about it, or maybe the policy's not intended to do so, the way that the policy reads is when your vehicle's in use, we will provide coverage for it. And there's no exclusion for what occurred. So
right.
A lot of times when these situations happen, that's why when you read through a policy, there might be 40 pages of exclusions, because carriers don't go back and typically rewrite the entire policy when a claim like this happens. Obviously, they don't want to provide coverage for something like this. What they're going to do is they're going to keep the policy the way that it is, but they're going to add a specific exclusion to the policy to remove any exposure on their part to a situation like this. And that's not specifically to this case. That's why you have 40 pages of exclusions on a policy, is because things that aren't intended to happen. If you get an attorney that reads the policy one way and convinces a court that the policy language provides coverage for this act, that settlement will be paid out, and the insurance carrier, I guarantee, is going to be adding exclusion very quickly thereafter. So,
well, and I agree. And I also think that Geico is going to take a little bit more of a deeper look into, not to say this is going to happen again, I've never heard of anything like this before, but a little bit more in extreme cases like this, I think they'll take more of a look, because I have a quote here in the article from the arbitration panel that reads that Geico could have defended its interests by entering a defense of the insured individual. So basically, they didn't take advantage of the opportunity, because when the initial claim came up, they denied coverage,
right,
which then when they saw that it was ultimately ruled she was going to be awarded the 5.2, and then they appealed, and then they wanted to go into defense, it was too late.
Right.
You know, because you denied coverage, you didn't think that it was serious and that she would be getting the settlement. And then they ultimately, they're going to have to pay that $5.2
million. Well, I do want to put one disclaimer, and I don't, you know, obviously I'm not an expert in the case. I just thought it was something interesting that we could talk about on the podcast. And you can Google it too. I mean, it is an interesting case, but I did read in one article that Geico is going to be sending this up to the Supreme Court in Missouri.
Yeah.
So, you know, nothing's finalized yet, and we're not attorneys, we're insurance advisors, so it's not finalized, but it will be going to the Supreme Court. But, you know, just something interesting, and just to...
That you don't see every day.
Yeah, that you don't see every day, yep. And when you can find something that's interesting about insurance, we definitely want to talk about it on the podcast.
That's right.
Other than that, I think that's about all we have for you today. Jackson, do you have anything else that you might want to add?
I do not. My glass is empty.
Mine is too.
I'm glad that we were able to discuss the things that we did, including, once again, the shout out for boss Jeff Schultz.
Yep. And also, again, I just want to give another shout out to Ricky, really the brains behind the operation. He's going to go back in the lab and cut it up and make us sound good. So always appreciate you, Ricky, for that. And thanks for the whiskey as well. That was delicious.
Yep. And shout out all the listeners. Hopefully you guys are returning each time that we release another episode. And tell some friends, tell some family, like, subscribe, comment. You know, we want to hear from you guys. We're going to be posting this on all different platforms, as well as on LinkedIn, if you're following
any of us on LinkedIn or connecting with any of us. This isn't going away. We want to hear from you guys and obviously want to keep entertaining the listeners and gain more every episode.
Yeah, so. we just got set up on Spotify, so now we're on Amazon, iTunes, and Spotify now.
And Google Play.
Yep. So
we're everywhere.
Yeah, we're everywhere. Yeah,
you can't
miss
us.
We're global.
That's right.
We had a Belgium listener.
Belgium.
Shout out Belgium.
Shout out Belgium one time.
We really appreciate that. And be sure to like, comment, subscribe. And I think one thing in the works is we'd like to answer some questions from you guys moving forward. So we're kind of developing some way to maybe get some questions from you guys that we can answer live. So again, like, comment, and subscribe. And Jackson, can you do that thing one more time?
Oh, do you hear it? It's actually...
Thanks, guys.